Calling to order the meeting of the City of Berkeley Lake Planning and Zoning Commission, June 8, 2010. The time is 7:30. Leave the commission you have before you the agenda for today. If there are no objections, I say we proceed with the agenda. Any objections? Hearing none. Let's proceed to the approval of the minutes. Please review the minutes drafted for January 12th.
I make a motion to accept the minutes as read.
It's been moved. Is there any second?
Sorry.
It's been moved and seconded. That the minutes of January 12, 2010 be approved. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Abstaining? Minutes are approved. As stated, there are no changes in the agenda. I'll ask once again if there are any. Hearing none, we'll move into new business. Commission will see that we have three agenda items in the new business section. I will say that for this meeting, we did not plan to have any formal voting motions to entertain. So all of what you see is simply for discussion and information, and obviously the big agenda item is the buffer landscape and tree ordinance amendment that is being recommended to council for our comment. I thought we'd use our time for the most part to hear about that, discuss it amongst ourselves, and make a determination about any approval and or changes for a future meeting, if that's acceptable. Very well then. I'll cover the two administrative variances that occurred. It has been a while since those were, actions were taken, so I'm going to have to look to you to lead a explain to the commission the details of those variances, starting at 4175 South Berkeley Lake Road.
Both of these were for expansions to non-conforming structures, and in both cases, it was for additions off the rear of the structure, both of decks. 4175 was non-compliant with regard to both side setbacks, but the deck and everywhere conformed in the total structure in terms of lot coverage and pervious surface coverage conformed. 105 Ridge Road was the same way. The non-conformance was with the front setback off of Ridge Road, and the addition was on the rear, and everything about the addition conformed to the requirements of the code. So it was an easy administrative situation.
So let me ask, just for my own memory's sake, is that a slight shift in the way we used to do it? It seemed like, is that how we've always done it? As long as, I mean, I'm glad we're doing it that way. I totally agree with the logic of it, but it seemed like we used to get some of those in front of us. It didn't seem like Bob would give those out so easily, did he?
Bob, I think, is the one that recommended the change. I think you all actually amended that part of the code while he was still chairman, because it became obvious that that was a major sort of source of stress for some of the citizens, that they had these existing non-conforming homes. Whatever they were doing was not making anything worse for anybody,
right.
And they were having to end up, you know, sweating it in front of the board for a
okay.
decision. And I think that Bob thought that would be an easy administrative decision.
This is, as far as I know, a straight continuation of the process that Bob initiated. I will say that the only thing that I do in these situations is to go visit the property and just make sure that I can understand from a visual point of view what I'm reading on paper and raise any questions with staff that come to mind. But the main point is that for these kinds of properties, if it does not increase their otherwise non-conforming status, then it overcomes essentially the nuisance of having to call a meeting for something that would likely have been approved. There's been at least one borderline case And that, can't, some of you may recall, we, I don't know which property that was, but, it was a lake property where they,
the boathouse?
Yeah, where they had claimed administrative rights.
Oh, yeah. Right,
and I just was not comfortable. So once in a while you do come into a judgment area. Okay. But these are just to be insignificant.
Good. So explain, C, what are we doing about it today?
What you have is the result of a fairly, I guess, involved process led by the BLC, the Berkeley Lake Conservancy, and under the guidance of council, to do a substantial change in the city's code regarding buffers, landscapes, tree ordinances. Is the gist of it. There's a lot of thought that our existing tree ordinances are not strong enough, and they are particularly inadequate if at some future point the city has an opportunity to review development proposals in commercial areas that might in the future be annexed. So you'll note from a lot of the text in here, there's a lot of reference to commercial zoning areas. So in some ways this is hypothetical. But a lot of people feel like that our tree ordinances, even for the residential areas, have a need to be updated. So the process is, as I understand it, Lee can correct me, our job is to review, clarify, I guess make note of any concerns that we may have with this, and ultimately to send our recommendation to council by vote for this. This technically does not need to be run through the Planning and Zoning Commission. The council asked for this effort to be done, but it was the council's feeling that the Planning and Zoning Commission should take a look at it. Also, because so much of it deals with circumstances that we normally address, property development issues, etc. So we have the opportunity to weigh in, but if any of this is officially passed by council, we will have to pass motions to reconcile existing city code with the changes that would be required by this document. So one way or another, you have to be involved. So what's a good way to proceed?
Ultimately, what does that mean?
Well,
ultimately, what do we have any say over any part of this?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
The exercise is for you all to give your input into this document so that the council has feedback in regard to.
Okay, but then if city council decides to do whatever they want to do, what recourse do we have?
Always the city council is the governing body and has the decision-making authority, and they can choose to take or leave the recommendations from any of the citizen groups. Just so you know, the Berkeley Lake Conservancy has also reviewed this already, which was a really good exercise to have them involved. So once council gets it, it would have been run through that committee as well as you all, and just like anything else, if they give a recommendation that they don't agree with, they don't have to take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, can we list the areas they don't like?
I just need to get a sense of what would be the best way to go through.
I was just asking, Kit, how do we start? Do we just go through paragraph, section by section, and talk about what we like and don't like? I don't have any problems with the definitions.
Right. Yeah. So let's just.
Can we start with Division 2?
Okay. I just want to get a sense of the process that would be easiest for us. And let me just step back and ask, is it okay not to move to motion at this meeting? Because this is so lengthy and I don't know.
Well, I'd like to.
We need to have a discussion.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion dies because of lack of second, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my motion. We received this information on June 3rd, which was last Thursday, not even a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
No fault. I want it so noted in the motion, no fault of staff. We received this motion less than a week ago. It is in excess of 55 pages long. It is a tremendous, voluminous piece of work. I agree with you that we're not in a position to do any voting today. But what I would like to propose is that staff give us a fairly in-depth overview, and that's all we do tonight. And then we take it, we decide if we have to do some meetings outside of a regular council meeting, maybe a work meeting, so be it, but we decide to attack X number of sections or half the ordinance or whatever in different meetings. In other words, don't try to accomplish it all in one meeting.
Sure.
But as you said, I think you said, I am in no position whatsoever to make any votes on this. I'm clueless on this, and I don't want to see us get bogged down for 3 hours trying to struggle through it. I for one, need to study it a lot more. So my motion is we let staff give us the highlights of it. We can ask staff questions, and then we discuss specific parts of it at future meetings.
Sure.
Plural.
We have a motion. I think that's straightforward. Is there any second?
I'll second.
Very well. Any discussion?
Yeah. I'm not sure how this plays into Tom's motion, but I want to make sure that I get said tonight what I came here to say, because I took a day off of work to make sure that I didn't get
caught off the clock. I think that goes part of the discussion. When staff explains, gives us an overview, I think that comments from any commissioner are appropriate and legitimate comments, and say what you want to say.
Okay.
I'm not in any way, shape, or form trying to limit that discussion.
I'm worried about my schedule and me not being here when the time comes that we vote on something. And
right.
I feel more strongly about this than anything I've seen in my 5 years sitting on this.
Okay. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to put a cap on everybody's mouth, and I agree 100% with your comment.
Any more discussion on the motion
to not vote?
Yeah, the motion.
This motion is to not vote tonight.
The motion says that the gist of our meeting will be to hear and discuss and to not take any action, specific action on this at this meeting.
Can I ask, when is council expecting a response, or are they planning to vote on this, or?
Well, and I wanted to give this background. This was in your staff report. I don't know if you got the opportunity to read it.
Every page.
Okay. The way that this came about is twofold. We adopted a comprehensive plan a little over a year ago where this was an action item.
Yes, where council has ignored our work in the past.
With regard to the comp plan? I don't think so. The comp plan was not something that they ignored.
No, but the last.
Okay. About. Anyway, so that was on the timetable to be completed in the 2010-2011 horizon. Shortly after the comp plan adoption, I believe, one of our council members applied for a grant that was to complete an urban forest assessment of the city. We received the grant, and we have been moving forward in completing the different tasks associated with the grant. One of the things that we sort of committed to in marketing ourselves for the grant was that we were going to be looking at our tree ordinance as a follow-up to what was discussed in the comp plan process. So that's how we got to where we are right now.
How much was the grant?
I want to say $15,000. So I was tasked with doing this months ago, and the way that this ordinance was developed was through researching other ordinances nearby. And I'll go into that when we go through it. The intent was to have the Berkeley Conservancy look at it first and then to have the Planning and Zoning Commission have the opportunity to review it. I thought that you would need at least 2 months to do that, or I planned on you to have 2 months to do that. And then council will get it ideally in July, but potentially in August. We aren't committed to adopting it at any particular time. The grant is going to sunset in August. That's when we're supposed to have the deliverables completed. This is not technically a deliverable of the grant, so we aren't bound by that August. I think it's the end of August, 30th date. But we, Rebecca Spiller was the council person who applied for the grant. She has been keeping those folks apprised of where we are in our processes and where we are reviewing this ordinance in particular. So it is something that people are looking at, and I've just been trying to keep it on that same track as best I could, realizing that we've, you know, I've had to meet with a citizen group that was hard to get together, that took some time, and then knowing that I thought that you all might need 2 meetings, and council obviously will take at least 2 meetings, they have to vote on it. So, if that answers your question, August, September is when I expect that they will.
So there's no needed urgency in acting on this in that sense.
Well, but if we don't act on different parts of it tonight, that means the whole thing has to be done at the next meeting.
Well, you would just, I mean, typically speaking, you would make any changes between now and next meeting, or you know, I mean, even if that's through tonight's discussion and then in follow-up email, or whatever, you know, however you want to do it. Like we talked about, this is not technically a P&Z function. Okay, you're not acting in your necessarily official capacity.
So if we really want to influence council, we have to come to the council meeting and speak as a citizen.
Well, you certainly can do that, but obviously...
But do we have a role as P&Z?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and take the input that you have and then probably vet this through that. I mean, the same thing happened with BLC. Some of the things that BLC commented on were easy changes. A few of the things that they commented on are still in the ordinance, but I will pass their comments on to the council when they consider the code. So it may be the same situation with you all. I mean, I hear what you're saying. You know, staff has presented something. If none of you like it and you want staff to change a part of it, then, you know, I will just tell you that one of the things that was an issue for BLC is the permit fee. And, you know, that's something that the city administrator has asked me to follow through with to council to allow them to consider that and not just take it out of the ordinance because of that feedback. So in other words, I would report to them about that feedback, but it would stay in. It may be the same way here. It may be that you all have recommendations that they don't get necessarily incorporated into the text that they get, but they'll get a report saying, you know, Planning and Zoning Commission, you know, wanted this stricken or wanted this added or something to that effect. So,
we
you
have
that role.
Can I, with the permission group, we have a motion on the floor. I'd like to know if we can, yeah, we seem to be moving into discussion about the thing itself. Are we,
okay. Well,
can we?
Before we vote on it, yeah. I want to know what are our alternatives, Lee, in terms, what are our options in terms of, can we meet on this? Does it have to be on one of our regularly scheduled meetings if I can't make it or something? Or can we?
Ronnie can call a special meeting when he's here.
Okay.
I'll be responsible as far as that's concerned to anything the commission wants to do.
When the time comes to vote, I mean, I just want to make sure that I'm there.
Okay.
And you too.
Okay.
And we're not voting until we get it back from City Council, right?
No,
is that what you're saying?
No.
We're voting before City Council.
It's before.
Okay.
City Council.
I thought we were just
so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
We're just voting on our
way. It sounds like we don't need to vote. We just need to give them our opinion.
I told Ronnie that I think that it's best for you to vote because it will. That is an emphatic, you know, point to black and white. This is what P&Z did.
Sure.
Okay. If you're not comfortable with the code and you can't vote on it, then you can say that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we've reviewed it. We have these concerns that we want staff to bring up to council in their consideration, and then
I will amend my motion to add your stipulation, if you'd like, and that stipulation being that before this goes on officially to City Council, that the entire P&Z commission votes as an official vote, even if it requires a special call meeting.
I appreciate that.
You've heard the any objection? It's been moved and seconded and supported by the maker of the motion. So I don't think there's any need for that to be voted on as an amendment. Are we ready for the question? I think the record will show the motion, which is that we move on to discussion only regarding this agenda item, and that any subsequent action by the commission regarding this item only be undertaken by a vote of the full membership of the commission. Is that a fair statement? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Abstaining. Motion passes. Great. Let's now, I for one would like to get some understanding of this, as Thomas suggested, by virtue of your report.
Well, I haven't prepared any presentation
okay.
tonight. I mean, I just want questions.
Well, I've actually read this whole thing. I'm sorry.
And I can give you, maybe I should start by saying there were four other jurisdictions that were reviewed, and most of the language here is willingly. I mean, standard across the board, what you find in those tree ordinances. Mm-hmm. It's a big change for our city. Our tree ordinance was really skeletal before. And so this has gotten a lot more comprehensive. A lot of it has to do with commercial development. And I realize that we don't have a lot of commercial properties in the city. But if we ever annex, and if these ever go into redevelopment, then we would want something that addresses that. We did not have, for instance, an off-street parking landscaping requirement, which is pretty sad. I mean, that's something that you would have wanted when any of the commercial developments would have been developed, to be sure that you get some interior parking and landscaping. Islands and shade and all that kind of stuff. What you see is standard in other places, stuff that you may take for granted, but the reason that stuff is there is because there's a city making those developers put that in. And so a lot of what is here was meant to bulk up the standards related to development, okay? The tree preservation piece of this, there was a lot of specificity added to that, mainly to ensure that the people enforcing the ordinance understood what needed to be done and the people reading it understood what needed to be done. That's why it's so specific, okay? Sometimes if codes are real vague, there's a lot left up to interpretation and you might, you know, depending on who it is reading it, you may get some different opinions about it. So that's where we are with this. And like I said, if you all want to go through it from front to back, or if there are specific hot topics, I mean, I can tell you some of the major points that I think are significant to us that are changes, if that would be useful. I don't know if you're interested in that. It may touch on some of the things that you're already thinking or problems or.
That'd probably be a good start.
Please do. Yeah, that'd be a good start.
Okay.
Okay. So to begin with, the buffer, and I'll just take it in the order that it comes. The buffer standard, that's pretty boilerplate. And I would be surprised if that caused heartache for anybody.
Oh, okay. Well, can I ask then?
Yes.
42-224, Section B4.
What's that again?
Okay, it's
42.
Yeah. Where it says standards for permanent buffers, 42-224.
Right.
Down there on the next page, on number 4.
B4, right?
Yes, B4. In situations where the required buffer width is partially completely contained within an existing easement, the screening requirements shall be met outside the easement.
Right.
So if you got a 25-foot easement, and it's all pine trees, and now we have to add an additional buffer to that.
Right.
I don't like that whole
easement. Easement can be cut down. The reason is, I mean, if it's overgrown, but if it's a power easement, for instance, and the power company comes in, needs to do maintenance on their lines, and they cut the whole buffer down, then whoever's on the other side of that property line that had a buffer before, there's nothing there. That's why that language is there. That was taken from all the other codes I saw. If you all want to strike it, you can, but that's the intent. Now, the other thing about that is...
This is fine. I mean, I have, like, an objection, like, 3 to a page here. So, as long as you make me happy, I like that explanation.
I mean, recognizing...
For a power line.
Recognizing, well, or a sewer. if they need to get in and maintain a sewer line that's in that easement, just because it's grown up with pine trees, they're going to come in and cut those pine trees down. Okay? And then whoever was protected by whatever was grown there is no longer protected. Recognizing, of course, that for our existing city, none of this really matters. Okay? We've already, the buffers that have been established are already established. This isn't changing those buffers. Okay? Those are there. This would be for any new subdivision development or any new development adjacent to residential development or something like that where a buffer would be required.
Supplemental planning, C2, where it talks about the city maintains a list. I have a real issue with that whole concept, that there's a list of trees I can plant and can't plant, and who maintains that list, and how is that person appointed or elected? That's not defined in here, I don't think. And what if there's a new species like the American chestnut that's coming back anytime? And I would love to have one, but, you know, it's not on this list in the back, and so... You know, are we going to appoint the Berkeley Lake Conservancy? And what if they don't like crape myrtles this year? I mean, I just have a real hard problem that we are...
And there's a percentage, too. You can't go above a maximum percentage.
Right. I mean, I just have... For one thing, I think if there's going to be a list, we have to define who makes that list and how that list gets amended and appointed and decided and all this stuff. But first of all, I just hate the whole idea that there is a list.
And I understand that. Tree lists are... Most people prefer to have a tree list because you end up with rapid hitters. And raptors are trees that don't make it. Their survivability is low.
But they might be a specimen tree according to these rules, and you can't cut one down.
Well,
which is a different category,
right?
Altogether, but.
But somewhere doesn't it say that it can change that the OEO or something can make?
I think that it does. The reason that I didn't codify this is so that it could be more fluid. But, Swanee did that as well.
Yeah, but I don't want to put the decision into one person if you talk about OEO.
Well, probably the Berkeley Lake Conservancy would be consulted on that, or an arborist.
Consulting and legally making the decision are two different things.
But what if it's...
There's no process to legal... That's, and I took this example, and we can change it. The Conservancy preferred having a list that was maintained by the city rather than one that was required by ordinance. Swanee does it that way. Because they found their tree list was changing a lot. Okay.
Who changes it?
They have an arborist. That's who changes it. Now the city does not have an arborist on staff. We would have to contract with somebody to perform those services. I mean, basically the tree list changes to, as far as like what you're saying, if the American chestnut's coming back or whatever, it would be somebody that would make a decision about a tree that is probably native, one that does well in this climate, and one that would achieve the purposes of this. I will tell you, though, that you only have to use the tree list for the required plantings. You can plant a tree on your property that's not on this list, as long as it's not meeting one of the requirements of
as long as the requirements are fulfilled first.
Right.
So if you fulfill the requirements and your lot is such a size that you use up your entire lot, and you want American chestnuts, but you've used up your entire lot because there's physically no space and place to put a tree,
right,
then you really don't have a choice.
You have to file a variance and come before P&Z.
Right. Let's see, here's the problem.
Will we hear that?
If you come before P&Z, then we've got to give you a permit to chop down a specimen tree, those feet, whatever tree, and you're not going to get that.
It's not to say, if I wasn't clear about this before, I'm sorry, and I hope I make this clear in the staff report. The way that the comments were presented during the comp plan process was to help strengthen this ordinance to preserve existing trees. And I get that there's some sentiment about the specimen trees. It's like, whoa, you know.
Yeah, we could just delete that whole item. I wouldn't do that.
But what I'm saying is that is contrary to the task that I'm given.
Right. Well,
I wanted to be clear what I was tasked to do.
Oh, yeah,
well,
that's fine.
And let me say about the comp plan. The comp plan is a plan.
I mean,
we spent, three meetings discussing apartments for elderly that city council voted down because one person objected to having apartments in the city. It's in the comp plan, so I'm not saying that we're not going to do this. I'm just saying that I have a lot of concerns about these 55 pages. They restrict freedom, and a lot of freedom, I think, on homeowners. And I think they are so difficult. The whole thing about calculating your TDU, I mean, you know, I made an A in college calculus. I don't want to have to do this. I mean, it is unbelievably painful. If I had to count every tree and measure every tree on my lot two-thirds of my lot is woods. I mean, I could go to interstate. I have enough TDUs for my subdivision.
Right.
But I would have to prove it if I filed a permit.
You would have to prove that you were meeting the requirement.
Well, how am I going to do that?
You wouldn't have to count. Once you hit the requirement, you're done. Once you hit 32, you're done. You don't have to count your lot. You've already got 32 with this little section in this corner. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but how are you going to prove that? I just...
Well, Gene has to come out and verify it. That's how I mean. Now, but I want to be clear. This isn't what you're objecting to. Isn't that different than what we're already doing?
Yeah, that I was...
That's already there.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, exactly. No, it's very different from what we're doing. What we're doing now is if you want to cut down a tree, you have to call Gene and come down and you sign a paper saying I'm going to verify that I'm going to be sure that there are 32 or 16 from half acre.
Right.
What this ordinance proposes is that you file an application, number one, which is different. Number two, that the homeowner has to calculate the TDUs on their lot. It does not say you have to meet 32 and then you can quit calculating. It says, here's how many TDUs are on my lot. I don't think that I could do that. And I have advanced degrees and made an A in calculus. I couldn't do it.
Well, that's...
I mean, it would take 2 days of measuring trees to do it.
And we can make it clear that once you hit the TDU standard that you can stop. The reason that is because while what you described is the process in place, Gene runs into situations in the field
where he
can't...
He can't verify it.
The lot isn't compliant, potentially, and he has to rely on the homeowner. But he says, look, you need to give me a tree survey. I don't know where your property lines are. I don't know which of these are yours. I need you to present me with the information that I need to make a decision. So right now, the way it's working is it's easier for some people, but harder for others. This sort of makes it the same process for everyone.
Well, okay, I know a homeowner right now who has a Bradford pair at the end of her lot that one limb is split, and it sits right where they parked their car. So they want to take this tree down. So they called Gene. He came out and said, oh, yeah, you got plenty of trees. You can cut this tree down. That was not onerous on the homeowner. It would be onerous on the homeowner to come in here and pay a $35 or $75 fee, calculate the TDUs on his lot, and get somebody's blessing to cut down this tree that's about to fall on the car. I mean, I think that's onerous on the homeowners and takes away their liberties. And I just have an objection to the whole concept.
And that's fine. I mean, that's one of the things that the feedback that we need. If you want to remove the permit application piece of it, recognizing that Gene is then left in a position of having to sort of act one way for some people and a different way for other people, that's the problem, okay, from the city's standpoint that is trying to be corrected.
Let me ask you this mathematical question. Because I have read this and I'm thinking, I'm missing something here, but God knows, I guess I don't have the mathematical ability. Why are we going from 16 per half acre to 32 per acre?
Because it makes no sense to calculate by half acre.
Why not?
Because you have to do an extra, it's just...
I guarantee you 90% of lots in this city, if not 100% or less, that
I
half
agree.
Acre
you know,
or less.
How much
so why are you going to make them...
It's an extra calculation.
I think it's an extra calculation to force me to figure, okay, I have 0.32 acres. And so now I got to figure out what it would be per acre, and then I got to back out that calculation and see what it would be 0.32
because
acres.
Because once you have 0.32, you just multiply by 32.
Okay,
but you have a half acre, then you have to figure out the extra step.
All right, but this is a perfect illustration of my point. I mean, it's a perfect illustration. See, I understand what you're saying. You just multiply by 0.32 and you know how many you got per acre.
But that, again, is not a change.
I understand. It's not a... It's a way of calculating, but it's not a real change in the numbers.
Right, and it's an easier
but
calculation.
But it makes it more difficult.
But it's also, you have to understand, I'm not totally alone in this. Whenever somebody says it's not a change, then why are we changing it?
To make it easier.
No, if you say it's not a change, then why are you going through the hassle of changing it?
To make it easier. Well, seriously, Tom, I mean...
And I'm not attacking you, don't get me wrong. I'm not attacking you. But you say to make it easier. To me, it makes it harder.
Okay.
And when you say it's not a change, well, if you're not going to change something, why change it?
The other reason is that every other ordinance that
I don't... But that's the problem. See, that's the other thing. And no disrespect to you or anybody on the city staff, but I live in Berkeley Lake. I don't live in these four or five other cities. Sure, it might be nice to know what they're doing, and I think it's helpful to know what they're doing, But I'm not going to make decisions on the, for the city and how as a city commissioner, as a city P&Z commissioner, because some other city does something.
Okay.
So when somebody comes to me and goes, well, five other cities are doing it this way, well, so what? I don't live in five other cities. I live in Berkeley Lake. If I wanted to live in five other cities, I'd sell my home and go live in five other cities.
I apologize. Let me explain. For me,
when I
read the ordinance, 16 trees per half acre is a harder calculation for my brain. My brain does it by the acre because you know what your acreage is. You probably don't know what your half acre is. That's a harder number to get at. So for me, I was just trying to simplify the code. If it's not simple, then we can change it back. I have no, it doesn't bother me whatsoever. It doesn't change the intent of the code. The code is meant to give it that amount of trees. I was just trying to be, when I saw every other code that did do it that way, I thought, why do we do this differently when it's an extra step in calculating the number of trees you need? That's how my brain looked at it.
You know, we're comprised of residents primarily. There's really not too many places that we can develop like a developer would. But I can see it being helpful to a developer who had those properties to know, you know, to be familiar with different cities.
When you've already developed other cities.
And so, and it's very confusing to go to city to city developing with different ordinances. So it is nice to have a...
It's a standardized way of talking about tree density units. It's just typically done by acreage. And to me, in my brain, that's a much easier calculation than having to go through, okay, I've got to get my half acreage and then multiply that by 16. Even though I'm half acreage.
All right, can I make some general comments before? Because we're getting into specifics that I didn't even think we were going to get into tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I apologize.
It's Jeff, actually.
Well, I'm ready for my next line.
I know you are.
I don't know what the prejudice is against Leland Cypress. But.
All right. I believe that for the most part, the proper function of government is to preserve life, liberty, and property. And I'm really not a fan of a whole lot more than that. I'm a constitutionalist. I believe our founders had it right. I'm appalled by the 76,000 pages of our IRS tax code or whatever it is. And you hear all these bills that go through Congress that it's a bill to do one simple thing and it's 1,200 pages, right? I'm into minimal government. And a 55-page tree ordinance does not qualify as minimal government in my mind. So right off the bat, I'm like, yuck. And no offense to all the work that you put into this.
Thank goodness for this. This sizes it all up. I mean, if something could be like this.
I know, but that's not the point. The point is whether you're a developer or you're a homeowner, just trying to figure out what you're allowed to do for a tree. To me, this is, I hate this. I hate that we're becoming the big government, which is, I moved to Berkeley Lake because it was little and because, you know, so.
And we voted.
I agree.
So there's so much about this right off the bat. Both of my neighbors pretty much clear cut their backyards. They have beautiful homes. They wanted a nice view of the lake. They clear-cut their backyard pretty much because they have forests in their front yard. And so do I. And I could cut every tree down in my backyard. We choose not to. They chose to do it. I wish they hadn't. But actually, when you're out on the lake, their lots are beautiful. And mine looks, you know, you can't see my house because of all the trees. We like the shade in our backyard. But that's what the beauty of Berkeley Lake to me is, that you can move here and you can do stuff like that. And I hate to see us go and start... You know, if we annex some property and somebody and it's commercial or industrial and somebody goes in there and they clear cut it for their building, that's okay to me. That's property that we didn't even have before. And if they clear cut it or they develop, we annex heritage, whatever it's called over there, and they don't have as many trees, I'm okay with that. I hate that we're stepping on people's freedom like that. And then you start getting into the specifics of it. I fly over our city every week. Coming back from Europe. We come right down 85. I can look out the right side of the airplane. I see our city. You know what I see? I see nothing but trees. You can't see a road anywhere. All you can see is the lake, and you can see the dam, and you can see trees. And that's it. And so...
Well, first of all, 55 pages is not the length of the ordinance. I mean, the ordinance itself is 29. There is an appendix that is meant to help demonstrate how to do street trees. The list is something that would be internal, but I understand what you're saying. It's long. You know, we can take some of the specifics out of it. The danger in doing that is lessened at the beginning. When you remove, tree ordinances are complicated, is really the truth of the matter. And our existing tree ordinance, in a lot of people's minds, wasn't cutting it. No pun intended.
Okay, so that's where we need to know. What's wrong with the existing ordinance? I mean, you said twice it wasn't cutting it or that it was a skeleton. I have experienced, okay, just as a homeowner who's not clear-cutting my yard, an ordinance enforcement officer storming into my driveway and announcing that he was reported that there was a chainsaw in my cul-de-sac and was I cutting down a tree? Well, no, I was sitting there playing with my children. And, you know, and I'm like, who are you, the Gestapo, to come stomping into my yard and announce that somebody reported that we were cutting down a tree? You know, we weren't, but even the whole idea that he would do it made me angry. Now, this was like 6-7 years ago, but it made me angry. And so I'm reading this ordinance, and it is telling me that if I have, even the emergency cut down in here, you have to contact the city. Well, what if happens if it's Memorial Day and there's a tree laying on my house?
That's always been in our code. We can change that too, but, and I don't know how to handle that because the intent there was that in an emergency situation, you would be allowed to cut a tree down. The reason it was you contact the city is we would be the ones to help you find the people that you need to do it. Lima used to be in that role. I don't think Lima wants to be in that role anymore. So we have to figure out how to deal with that piece of the code. But that is existing code language. I mean, that's not a new.
But I guess if there's a weakness in our current code, let's stick the weakness. Let's not take away everybody's freedoms. I mean, I'm dead on everything Dan said.
What freedom, besides the permit application, and I understand that that is more burdensome on the person that's applying for a tree permit. I mean, I understand what you're saying about that. But other than that, can you be more specific about the freedoms that you want to...
List of trees. The other one, you can't use a Leland cypress. Number two, you can't cut down anything without calculating how your TDUs on your lot. That's what's in this code. In no event shall a grandfather project be extended for a greater time period than 24 months. I mean, the whole thing about specimen trees,
if you
need a warehouse in the middle of that lot.
You pay an architect $10,000 to redo his great dining room you want in the back of your house, and all of a sudden somebody comes along and goes, damn, we didn't see that specimen tree, and we're not allowed to chop that down, so now you're going to have to come back and re-engineer your own house?
That's an area that I actually wanted to talk about with you all, because it's true that Berkeley Lake regulates residential tree removal more stringently than any other city I'm aware of.
Right, so that's where we're coming from, that we already have these stringent requirements.
Yeah, but time out. But we didn't have any input into the way it already was. I don't like the way that it was. This is our first time to get to weigh in on the way that it already was.
Okay. Right? Let me ask you this question.
I don't know, because I wasn't here when the original...
No, but I'm saying, it sounds to me like you're saying, yeah, but that we're already that way.
Well,
and what we're saying is we don't like the way we are already, and this is our opportunity to weigh in on the way we are already that we don't.
I'd like to ask two questions. Number one, who, other than you that did the research, who was the author of this ordinance? Are you the only author?
Yeah.
Number two is, instead of starting what appears to me, and I may be wrong, but instead of starting what appears to me to be almost starting over, why don't we take the ordinance right that we have today and decide what we don't like about it, get rid of that, and then the next meeting say, and this is not the formal motion, and then the next meeting say, okay, here's what we need to add to the existing. Because this, to me, just seems so...
Well, that's what you did. That's what you did.
Our
existing ordinance is in here.
It's in that, and it's contained, within deletions and then the added text is the underlying text. The specimen, back to what I was saying, the specimen tree regulation on residential property, that's an issue that I want to discuss. We talked about it at BLC. The folks there were okay with it. But if you all aren't, then I think that's really reasonable. I have concerns about that. Do we want to go this far to protect specimen trees in residential areas? It makes sense to do it in commercial areas. That's very standard. And these other codes that have specimen tree categories, I'm sure, only regulate those on commercial development properties. I get that it would be very difficult to have to review your house because you've got a specimen tree. I understand that. I'm sympathetic to that.
A tree that's 24 inches in diameter, we're not talking about a 100-year-old oak tree.
Right.
Okay? I mean, a specimen tree, I mean, I can count five out of this window right here. I mean, if you were to build a tiny warehouse on any lot that's big enough to put one in this city, I guarantee you you'd find a tree right in the middle of it that's 24 inches in diameter. I mean, you're saying we're doing this for commercial property, but we're essentially making the property unavailable for commercial development if we say a 24-inch tree is a specimen tree. I mean, I'm not talking, I mean, a 10-foot diameter oak, yeah, that's a specimen tree. But, you know, a regular sweet gum sitting out there that's 24 inches in diameter,
so
I mean, that's kind of tree out there is 24 inches in diameter.
Can I try to understand what you're saying? So you don't like the requirement even for commercial properties?
Not at 24 inches. I mean, this definition, I mean, I bet you we could walk out here and find 10 trees around this property that are specimen trees by this definition. I think a 6 inch is for an understory tree.
It'd be interesting to see if they could.
I bet I have five in my yard.
It'd be interesting to see if they could have built this city hall under these requirements.
Exactly. That would be fascinating to know.
Well,
could they have built the city hall under these requirements?
As a city that is known as a tree city, I took the more restrictive of all of the definitions of specimen trees from the cities that I looked at. 12 inches was another one for flowering trees. We can do that. 28 or 30 for pines, maybe. 24 for hardwoods is pretty much standard for those.
Now, you can still take down the specimen trees.
You can still take them down, but you have to be able to demonstrate. And this happened to me in a past life, but, you know, obviously we have some difference of opinion about certain things. I had to go to bat against the developer that was trying to remove excessive trees. Okay, and one of them was, we considered them significant. That was the term that we used, not specimen, but it was a larger than 24-inch hardwood tree. And they wanted, you know, to put a bunch of excess parking right there. And we fought with them to preserve that one tree because it was a significant thing to that community. This community cares a lot about trees. It's about...
How many of them are here in this meeting? None. They may be a room full at the next meeting.
Right.
But they also don't know that, I mean, you see, I would not have fought for what you did. I mean, it's a difference of opinion. I'm not saying
right.
It was wrong for you to do that. But I'm just saying, if I were building my office and there was a specimen tree sitting where in the middle of the parking lot.
It's a different problem, Jeff.
Why? It's a commercial property.
It was a situation where it was an unnecessary tree removal. Okay, what this is meant to get at is if you can design a site and get what you need to get, your required parking, a building that suits your purposes, you can remove specimen trees. If you're, say you're, and we don't have this requirement, but where I was, there was a minimum parking requirement. Okay, if you were removing trees to put parking in beyond the minimum required, and it was a significant tree, then you couldn't do that. Okay,
so, it says on number F, the OEO or city arborist may identify and require the preservation of a tree stand if it contains one or more specimen trees and the trees are interlocked with other members of the stand in such manner as to imperil an individual tree or other members of the stand were to be removed. I mean, in other words, a person who is hired by the city can tell somebody they can't do that.
Right.
That's what this ordinance
right,
says.
Because removing some of the trees in that stand might damage the
specimen tree. I mean, it could prevent... It really would be curious if this building could
Can I ask a question that pertains to specimen trees? Because according to Joel of Trees R Us, 90% of the trees in North Georgia pretty much are infested with ants. All right? Every tree that's come down in my yard, which I have a lot of trees, so I've lost a lot of trees, is hollow on the inside. So I'm a little bit, and you know, I wish there was an arborist here, I'm just wondering, does it even make sense to try to preserve specimen trees because probably they're eaten up. All right, I just lost an oak in all the rain in the fall that was probably that big around. All right, I mean it was huge and it fell down and in my backyard. Thankfully, it didn't fall down on the house, but you know, and it was totally. I mean, that much of the inside was gone. You know, so it was bound to happen.
And there was no way to know that from the outside. An arborist couldn't have made that determination.
Right, but my question, but Joel says they're all like that. So my question is, why, you know, does it even really make sense to preserve these trees that are probably old and probably eaten up inside, and probably the ones that are likely to come down in the next storm? I'm just asking. I just don't know. That was the thought that popped into my head.
Most communities have put a premium on preserving old growth trees. They are the trees that provide shade and the most environmental benefit, and they have withstood weather and elements for a great many years. When you plant a new tree, the amount of time that it takes to get to that level of maturity and health and the benefits that you draw is a lot of time. So most cities, and one of the things that I was tasked with doing is providing more credit for existing trees so that there wasn't an incentive for people to cut down old growth and just plant a bunch of new small trees. Because the way that the ordinance is written out, that was the interpretation that people had of the way that the code was read.
Let me give you another example. When the tornado hit in 97,
eight,
and I lived in Berkeley Walk at the time, a few doors down from Jeff, and we had a beautiful neighborhood with the buffer was filled with 100-foot oaks and the tornado came through, and the tornado knocked down 90%.
70 trees in my yard.
Yeah, probably 90% of the trees around the neighborhood. And it was unfortunate, and for the first few years, it looked like a war zone. But people went in and planted a bunch of trees, and if you drive through there now, even though they're not 100 feet tall yet, it's the neighborhood's beautiful again, I think. And I'm just wondering... I don't know. I'm not an arborist. I'm speaking about stuff I don't really know about.
Chief, isn't there something about you can see the age of the tree, how much more life it has, the condition that it's in, and that plays into whether or not you can take
some of the stuff in the tree codes that I saw, and I don't remember how in your read ours was sealed or not, I included these things, got really specific about how to determine a specimen tree. And including health and all that good stuff. So, yeah, the condition criteria, life expectancy of greater than 15 years, relatively sound and solid trunk, no signs of decay, no more than one major or several. I mean, there's a whole list of things that have to, the tree has to be healthy to be considered, okay? So if it can be determined that the tree has an insect infestation or something, a disease, then it wouldn't qualify as a specimen tree.
Yeah, and I understand that. So a hollow or a rotted tree would not qualify. But I think if we're going to even have a specimen tree issue, I think these diameters need to be much bigger. I mean, we need to be talking about a giant oak tree, not a 2-foot sweet gum. You know?
Yes, yeah, some cities don't even consider sweet gums.
It's on our tree list. Whoever created the tree list.
The tree list was, and just another aside, the comp plan specifically referenced when it comes to tree ordinance, which is the most recently revised of the ones that I looked at, that and then one of the newest ones. The trees have always been there. We've had tree lists from Gwinnett County ever since I've worked here, part of our code. Okay, so the tree lists are not a new thing. They are.
Well, you could say recommended tree list.
Well, most cities, like I said, it's a balancing between individual property rights and community good, okay? So that's how most people look at tree ordinances, okay? They understand that you don't want to remove freedoms from an individual property owner, but at the same time...
Well, that's what all of P&Z is, in a sense.
Right.
I mean, that's what all of what we do. But I think in this sense, that we have come down real hard on the rights of the few people who are in love and worship trees. I mean, honestly. The other thing about the...
Now, are you saying... Wait a minute, just to clarify, are you saying...
That we're giving...
About the document as a whole or parts of it?
Oh, well, lots of parts of it. So, okay. I mean... The thing about the ordinance enforcement officer, I don't personally know Gene. He may be a sweetheart.
He is, but it's not there forever. Because he won't be here forever.
Right. It wasn't that long ago that we had a really hard-nosed ordinance enforcement officer.
Right.
I mean, this gives the ordinance enforcement officer power to... prevent a warehouse from being built or a commercial property from being developed. I mean, it really takes away property value.
Well, it would never prevent the development.
Oh, it says here.
You
can't do that. It would be illegal, wouldn't it? I mean, in terms of...
If you can redesign the site to save the tree, that's what I did when I told you how to fight somebody. I said, you can design the site and still get 74 instead of 79 parking spaces and save this tree.
If it's in the corner,
but what
if it's in the center of the lot?
But, but also at what cost?
At what cost to who?
To the owner. When you say
when you say, and I respectfully agree with you, when you say you can redesign a building to save a specimen tree.
Right.
Okay. I have a building. It's going to cost me $50,000 to build. I have a specimen tree there. And because of the ordinance, I have to build around that specimen tree, so I have to redesign it. So now, architecture fees and construction fees, now instead of costing me $50,000, it costs me $125,000.
With all due respect,
no, it costs me $125,000. I have done what you've said. I have been able to build that building and save that tree. But at what cost?
What?
In my example, which is fictitious, it's cost me twice as much as my original cost.
The point of the code is that you do not get to the point of already designing everything before you start considering the specimen trees on the site. You come in, you have a meeting with staff up front. I mean, this is just, this city doesn't do a lot of development, but I have done a lot of development in my background. Okay, that is the process that should take place. And you go through a process with a planning staff, and they give you comments on, are you meeting the code or aren't you? And if you are not, they tell you what you need to change, and you do it. If you fight them, you fight them. But I'm just saying, the point of it, having it in the code, is that they know up front, this is an issue. We need to identify these trees and figure out whether we can design the site. If you all don't like that, that's something that you need to pass on to council. I'm here to tell you that is very standard. And if we end up with commercial developments and we don't do that, we will be very relaxed with our tree ordinance, and we will not be very worthy of our tree city status.
So let me ask you a question about that. Because I heard you say a lot of people, and I heard you say a lot of people. What does a lot of people mean? Because when you have a meeting, or if you're talking about the BLC or whatever, those are people with a certain perspective, a certain objective on nature and trees and everything else. Or if you have a town hall meeting to discuss a tree ordinance, the only people who are going to show up are people who are unhappy with the tree ordinance, who think that it should be a lot stricter. Mm-hmm. Right? All the people, which is probably 90% of the people in our city, who could care less about the tree ordinance, they're not going to show up. Mm-hmm. All right? So, you know, I bet, and I have no idea, I could be totally wrong, but I bet if you polled the city and said, what percentage of our city actually cares that we're known as a tree city? I mean, it's probably 3% actually care that we're a tree city. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's 50. I don't know. So,
is that an official kind of designation?
It is.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get at is, when we balance property rights against the common good of the city, the common good can be defined by what the city wants, but when I hear terms like a lot of people and a lot of people, I don't know what that really means. I don't know if a lot of people means we've got 1% of our city that really cares a lot and so they're going to make every meeting, or if we really feel like 50% of the city is really happy that we're called a tree city.
I can't get at that. I don't know the answer to that.
Just to clarify what I was trying to say, it's my impression, and I, you know, I didn't take the poll, and I haven't been to any of the meetings, but I lived in this city for a long time, and it's my impression that a lot of people who live here also include in their values the idea that there are more trees in this particular community and protection for the existing trees than there are in other communities that they could choose to live in. I couldn't tell you, you know, what the numbers are, but that's an impression I have. So I think there are reasonable people on either side of the issue. Should we bend over backwards to protect trees in this community, or should we not? I think that's, but I would be less than honest with you to just go along with the idea that most people don't care. I just don't know that one way.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't either.
I tend to agree with Rodney that I think it's more than 1%, 3%. I would be surprised if it was 30%.
I was thinking 90.
Maybe.
Well, it's not 90
there, but, you know, here again, it's where you live. Maybe around the lake.
Yeah.
Maybe around the lake, yeah. But my median's perspective is Miramont. And I can tell you right now that after we passed the last ordinance about the whatever is called supervious surfaces, I have caught nothing but crap from people in Miramar because I'm regulating trees, I've had a couple people call me up and cuss me out because they want to put a swimming pool in their backyard, but now because we have the impervious services, they can't cut down trees and put a swimming pool in their backyard, and they all equated it to a tree ordinance, even though it wasn't.
Yeah, it's not a tree.
But that's how it's perceived in Maryland.
So,
well, there is.
So what I'm telling, but what I'm telling you, if you, and this isn't, I don't want to get in this discussion because I hate people want to get in this discussion, but if you talk about people that literally live around the lake, yeah, it's probably 90%. You talk about people that don't live around the lake, it's probably 10%.
So, but here's where I want to go back to. Of all the cities I fly over, there's no city that has more trees than this.
Oh, yeah.
With the existing ordinance, which is lax, I guess is the word we use.
It's not lax. It's just the things that changed were the concern that was brought up in the comp plan process was to do something to preserve existing trees, to do more about preserving existing trees.
But then you also say is our existing tree ordinance we have. Did I hear you wrong? Did you also say the existing tree ordinance we have as it pertains to residential, which this city is 90%+ of, is one of the strictest you've ever seen?
It is strict only insofar as the fact that it regulates residential. So I've seen...
That's my point.
Right,
right now, the city is 90%+
residential.
That's all
we are, and people were looking to save existing trees.
So there is a feeling on the city council. Since you've been... I'm making this judgment on that. I'd ask you to make a judgment. There is a... In my mind, there is a feeling on the city council because they gave you your tasking orders. That this ordinance needs to be really strengthened just in case we do annex some people, some properties and have a commercial. But at that same time, it will take away or burden the rights of the residents, which at the current time make up 90% of the city. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't think that is what happened. I mean, the reason that the commercial stuff is in there is because we need it. That was anybody else's decision to put in but mine.
Okay.
Because those are standard elements in any tree and landscape ordinance, and there's no reason that just because we're only, you know, a residential city, that we shouldn't prepare for the day that we may not just be a residential city anymore. I've seen that we've done that in the past, and things are wrong because we looked at ourselves one way, and things moved in, and we weren't ready for them, and what we got and what we wanted. Okay, so this is to protect us in the event that we do have commercial developments that we are dealing with. We've got an ordinance in place. The residential piece of it is that was the marching orders were strengthen the ordinance to protect existing trees further than we do now. That was what I understood the comp plan to say. So there were two things primarily done in this code to do that. One is to double the value given to existing trees. Okay.
I like that.
I think that has hurt anybody's right opinion at all with this code.
Except that what that means really is you could have less trees.
Yes. What is?
Yes.
You could have less trees to preserve these trees that are eaten up with ants.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness. So that weakens.
No, it doesn't weaken it.
No.
I mean, it depends on how you think of trees. Most people, I shouldn't say that. Okay. I, in my planning experience, have come to the understanding that preservation of older, mature trees is preferential to planting new, smaller trees. The benefit, the property value benefit is great. Okay, but those are a better thing to have on your lot. You have old growth, you have mature trees, that's pretty much a better case than a clear-cut subdivision with a bunch of teeny tiny trees up front. Okay? So that's where I'm coming from. Doubling the credit value was just so when you have somebody that's looking at their lot, instead of cutting this bigger tree down and then putting a bunch of little ones to meet the requirements, they may consider saving that bigger tree because it counts more. Okay? It's to encourage preserving the existing tree. And existing trees provide shade, they're better environmentally, they provide habitat. There's just a number of things that they do.
The density, though,
the density isn't changing.
Would go...
The density is staying the same. You're required to have a certain tree density.
But
if you have a bigger tree,
it
counts for more. If you have a larger tree, that is more density than if you have a smaller tree. So it just counts more. Okay.
And existing big trees account twice as much as a new big tree.
So now you could have less big trees. I mean, I'm confused. Okay. Because it sounds like to me that now you could have three very large trees that would take care of your
Guess you could.
Team whatever.
Put six.
So you could have just three trees on an acre that are...
It depends on
the
size.
That's right, if they were large.
Yeah. Right. So that would look good. Mm-hmm. Yep.
This was the task, though. I mean, I just want to be clear about...
I'm fine with that.
Glenn County just did that. They had a tree commission that looked at their ordinance. I took the numbers directly from them.
I'm fine with that. But since we're discussing, I just want to say that the specimen tree, if you had a big specimen tree in the center of a lot, I think you could severely hamper the buildability of that lot and its property value. The alternative compliance, I have a real strong issue with. I mean, it essentially says...
Where are you?
42-270. Occasionally, this intent cannot be met because the project site will not bear the required density of trees. In other words, if you have a site that will not bear 32 TDUs, you know, you're going to build on a cliff next to a stream that's 30 feet down. I mean, you can't plant a bunch of trees there. I mean, there's no way to put trees on this lot. That's what this clause is saying. Then you have to contribute money. You have to pay a fine, essentially, into this tree replacement. I mean, so, to no fault of your own, because your property can't bear a tree, you got to pay extra money to the city. I have a real issue with that. I mean, I'm not saying that if it can't bear a tree, fine, make them plant a tree. But if their property won't bear a tree, I just have an issue with that. I mean, since we're just making comments, I wanted to bring that out.
Well, it's not just, I mean...
That
can happen because of development. Yeah. If you have a site and you're trying to build a building and parking and stormwater retention and whatever other utilities that you've got to get on the site and you can't, you eat up your site to develop and you're allowed to do that. Conceivably. I mean, you know.
No. That's different. You still have to have the...
That's what this is meant to accomplish, though. It's meant to, if that is your situation, if the development of your lot has made it so that you can't meet your 32 TDUs, then you pay.
The development is one thing, but that's not what this actually says. It says because the project site will not bear the required density of trees. I mean, it's one thing if you... pave a lot, yeah, well, you haven't done the trees. I mean, that's one thing. But if your lot is squirrely, I don't know how to describe this. You know, there's a river in the middle of it. There's a cliff on the back side, and you want to put a house up in one little corner, and you can't put trees on it. Is that a fault of the landowner? One thing if we're talking about clear cutting and we're not going to put trees. Oh, yeah, they shouldn't do that. I mean, nobody's asking that.
This may be another example where we would want to make this applicable only to commercial developments. And it sounds like your issue is with the residential owner that would have a problem meeting their tree density.
How could this ever happen, Jeff? How could this ever happen with the way we limit the amount of square footage of a lot that can be...
Well, that's what I'm asking. I mean, she was saying if we did that...
We don't limit...
In commercial?
Mm-hmm. We don't. It would never happen. But it could potentially happen on a lot. We don't have those same size.
So how could we just... So then my recommendation, Jeff, would be we say that only applies to commercial. Okay. Just to be safe. I mean, I agree it would never apply residentially anyway, but...
Right.
But I also agree, if they're going to develop a commercial lot like that, to where they pave the whole thing, or whatever, then
I understand that. I didn't see that as even a possibility.
Well, they would have to still have their landscaping. We've already gone through there's required landscaping for commercial sites. Like I said, there's a street yard, what they call landscape for here, and then there's interior parking requirements. But I mean, and I don't have a site plan in front of me where I can point to this. I have experienced in the past situations where there were not adequate trees, even with provision of landscaping required. And because of that, you know, they needed to do a tree fund contribution. So it happens very rarely. It's meant to provide flexibility, in all honesty, so that the intent of the code is still met. For everybody.
And it's also meant to give them financial incentive to go ahead and try to design the site so that they can maintain the true density.
So if it was clear that this did not apply to residential development, would that abate your concern?
I think it would.
Just a process question at this point. How are you going to capture all of this?
What I'm going to ask for you all to do is probably, you know, Jeff has had sections that I think
yeah.
were stricken
okay.
entirely. I've got the recording, but it's going to be difficult
yeah.
for me. And it may be the easiest thing may be for people to send me a list of, you know, mm-hmm. go and get this out of here and
okay.
then perhaps do a redraft of
yeah.
what that would look like.
Yeah.
Maybe I send both of them to council.
Yeah.
Your P&Zs, you know, here's what came out of the VLC process, and
yeah.
let them go with it, you
okay.
know?
Yeah, that was just a question, because
I mean,
all of this is very good, and I worry that there's no way you're going to be able to
right. I'm not going to type all
capture
the
it.
I'm going to be thinking about what you're saying.
Okay, so let's, can we keep
sure.
going?
42303, mm-hmm. performance surety. I think the 3 months is pretty restrictive. If you were building even a commercial property in January and finished it in March, you wouldn't want to plant trees in June. You would want to do that in the fall.
Right.
So I think 3 months is way too restrictive.
It does say we'll be in accordance with other timetable for completion of supplemental city. Okay, that's the possibility.
Which is defined by whom?
Well, whoever's reviewing the site plan, the engineer or the OEO is probably the one. But I mean, generally speaking, people understand that argument that, you know, there's
okay.
a planting season. We want to not,
right, there's a plan.
We don't want to require them to plant in the middle of summer and have those things die.
Okay.
So,
but
section 42.3.
No, we haven't got anything.
Oh, sorry. Tom's got a spot.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Lee might have just answered this, but in the same section, I mean, 42.303, I got a problem with 42.303-1. The city's always going to win. I got a problem with that.
I'm sorry, explain. I don't think I'm not following.
It says, the surety shall, the last sentence underlined in the first paragraph, the 42.303A says, quote, the surety shall, one, be drawn in favor of the city.
Right.
In other words, screw you, excuse my French, resident, we're always going to win. No, it's going to be drawn to the benefit of the city.
Well, we're
that's
the
not
ones,
how I understood
we're
that.
We're the ones that are whole. It has to be drawn in our favor. This is to ensure that our regulations are met.
What does that sentence mean?
Which one?
Be drawn in favor of the city.
It
what
means
that
the surety is to the city.
To the city.
Right.
Meaning, yeah. Not
so that
in,
we hold the surety until such time as compliance is met. And then we release the surety.
Yeah, in favor of the city doesn't mean.
It doesn't mean we're just getting money. We're holding.
No, it just means it's basically like a check being made out to the city.
Right.
Is what you're saying by in favor of the city.
Right.
Yeah.
2 years seems a long time to me too.
Yeah.
I mean,
tell me where you are.
Well, I don't remember where that was. I'm not looking at it, but there is a thing about a warranty for 2 years.
That's called a street tree.
I can't remember.
Oh, it's to make sure that the trees live.
Okay, two years. I mean, that
yeah,
seems like a long
so
time. I think 1 year seems
okay.
much more reasonable.
1 year?
Okay, 42.349, violation and penalties.
Wait a minute. I want to make sure we're not going too fast for everybody else, and, which is great that you...
No, I'm laughing yeah. because I hit on this one.
Oh, okay. Good.
You're fine.
Okay.
Which section are you on? 42.349, violation and penalties. I almost caught my breath. If you cut down a tree, it's $1,000 a day. Or 60 days in jail.
That's existing.
Well, I think we should change it.
Well,
I think homeowners
that's
are...
enforcement language.
Well,
it's not right. to exceed, though.
Yeah,
it
but...
Could be
it doesn't
dollar.
Say that.
It's
yeah, but it could be 60 days.
Sure.
And it says that each day a violation occurs shall be considered a separate occurrence. If I cut down a tree and the OEO comes out 5 days later and says, you shouldn't have done that, and until you get this tree, it's a violation of every occurrence.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I get a tree planted 5 days later. Well, guess what? That's 600 days. Somebody could put me in jail. I have an issue with that.
Right. 600 days, wait. Okay, you're on 42.348A?
No, 43.349.
349, okay. Okay, and you understand. that's existing language, and you're particularly concerned about each day a violation occurs.
Well, I thought it's cutting down trees every day. That's what I, how I had read it, not that the tree was down already.
We can just remove that, and that one tree removed.
But still, $1,000, 60 days.
Council just voted on this not too long ago.
Yeah. Well, I also have a problem, and let me ask you this. This is totally off. Are we going to be voting on the wildlife ordinance also?
No.
Okay. See, because council is getting ready to vote on that, too, and that says if a deer comes in my backyard and eats out of my bird feeder and the OEO sees it, it's a penalty up to $1,000 because I'm not allowed to have a deer in my backyard eating out of my bird feeder. If you haven't seen that ordinance, go on the city's website.
Well, okay, let's talk about the fact that over the last umpteen years now, we've been saying we want the code to actually state exactly what we want it to state.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. All right?
Yes.
So, if we're not willing to put a homeowner into jail for 60 or 120 or 180 days, it shouldn't say that. I don't care if that's boilerplate.
I wish the city attorney were here to respond to that. There's a statutory reason that I think that's there. Okay, we have actually had somebody that's in contempt of court here for an ordinance violation.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of money dealing with him and trying to extract the money that he owed us for this violation. Mm-hmm. And we did seek a warrant for his arrest. Okay? So, I mean, all I can tell you is I understand that you're upset about some of these things. This is not an area that I see us moving on because this is standard language, not here, just here,
okay,
throughout the code. And if there are reasons that it's like
so
that,
we can still put in our recommendation and the attorney can explain it at the time, right?
So you want to remove the 60 days.
And the $1,000.
Well, I was thinking that we should have a set amount instead of saying up to. But
y'all, seriously?
But I understand where the lawyer comes involved.
Well, the $1,000 thing, the city just did that. And they sought that for a very good reason. Because that is the state what allows you to seek up to that much money. The city spends a lot of money holding court here and getting very little recompense. You know who's paying for that? The taxpayers are. Okay? This is meant to recover costs associated with what we're doing from the person that violates the code. And so I understand where you're coming from, but there are reasons why these decisions have been made the way that they've been made. So think about yourself and your right as a taxpayer who isn't breaking the code and whether or not you want to be paying for some of these things, okay? That the people
no,
are.
We have a mean judge, long term, but if we have a mean judge and I cut down a 6-inch tree and he's ticked off at me for some reason, it costs me $1,000.
It could.
And, yes, and that is onerous.
I agree.
That is way out of line for me to be charged $1,000.
Make a recommendation to me, make a recommendation to council. I mean, you know, all I can tell you is they voted on these codes within the last couple of years to up all the fines in the code.
I know, but we have new city council members now.
You can have a certain amount per caliper. I mean,
per TDU,
whatever it is, you know.
I could have 60 TDUs on my lot and I cut down a tree and now I have 59 and a half. I'm still liable for $1,000? I mean, really? That's what it says.
I don't think that you're liable for $1,000.
Well, it says any person charged with violation of the provision of this article, which means if I didn't file an application and calculate my TDUs and get OEO approval, I violated it.
How much is this family getting charged for cutting down that tree on the back side of the lake?
I'm not familiar.
What tree?
Well, apparently they just moved in and
maybe
it's hearsay.
So nothing right now.
Oh, I heard a lot of people taking down trees this weekend.
The guy, the lot up here, lot one of the estates, was in court for taking down trees that he wasn't supposed to take down. Now he didn't get charged $1,000. I don't remember what his total fine was. He took down more than one. And it was in, Gene had met him out there, gone over with a fine tooth comb, what it was that he was allowed to take down.
Is that the lot that was used in the example when we did the impervious thing?
Mm-hmm.
Which is also the lot that I said in this meeting that I was concerned it was going to be, that particular ordinance we were voting on was in retaliation because the man cut down trees and I was assured it was not retaliation, mm-hmm. and now you're telling me the guy had to go to court to defend himself? Sounds like retaliation to me.
But we didn't know it.
They were at separate times. The time, at the point that they cut down the trees, I think it was after you all already passed the ordinance.
No, they cut down the trees before we passed the ordinance because we had two citizens here that were furious that he cut down all the trees. And they were demanding that ordinance to help in a way, you know, in a tree ordinance, to make sure it wouldn't happen again. And I'll go back and get the minutes.
But it should have been, we should have voted on that a year before the house was even a concept. I mean, we had brought it up many times before that.
I know there are issues and we're trying to work through money, but when you read this, each day is a violation. Each tree removed is a violation.
I agree that you can remove it each day. I agree.
And the owner of the property where the violation exists and any builder, contractor, or agent who may be assisted in the commission of such violation may be charged with a separate offense. So you could essentially charge the contractor and the owner for each tree for each day. I mean, we could be talking thousands. We could pay for this building with a couple of the properties around here. I mean, I just think that is a very over the top. I mean, that is cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, for cutting down what is truly a renewable resource. Trees are a renewable resource. They are not a deity. And that's not, I just think that this whole thing elevates trees way higher than the rights of the individual.
You know, they come in for a land disturbance permit. I mean, before you even buy a piece of property, you have to see whether or not you're going to be able to build on it. So you have to, you come to Lee, right, to see what I can and can't do.
Well, hopefully not.
A lot of times before you can buy a property. I mean, I wouldn't buy a commercial piece of property without knowing if I could build on it, where I could build it, you know, what the tree density, where it could be located, everything about it. So if you can't do it,
you just have 24-inch sweet gum on it. You can't build a warehouse on it.
Well, then you just have to size it up. You know, can I afford to do all of that? You know, all the tree density stuff or the.
But if you pass an ordinance that restricts what people can build on a lot, then what you've done is you've diminished the value for the current owner because now all of a sudden the people can't buy it and use it for what they might have been able to use it for. So it's still an important point.
Yeah, it is.
The violation section, all I can say is that make your recommendation on it.
I understand.
Well, that's like eliminating.
That's not going to happen.
I would like to eliminate the 60 days. I would like to eliminate the per day violation. I mean, if you cut down a tree, does that count as one day or does it count for every day that it's down until you plant the next one?
I think 1,000 is excessive.
I mean, I could go with something like 100 per TDU less than the minimum 35 or 32, whatever it is. I mean, if you've got 64 and you cut down a tree and your TDU is now 63, are we really going to find that person? Because they cut down a tree when they've got like more trees than everybody else?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, what would be, you know, if you set up a minimum TDU and doggone it, it's your responsibility to make sure you don't go below that minimum TDU, mm-hmm. and if you do, now you're going to be subject to fines. But for somebody who has a forest, like I do, I mean, to me, I really ought to be able to just go and cut down a tree without even calling Gene. To me, it's almost crazy.
I agree. I mean, a third of my lot is forest. You know, and...
Well, we can make that in the, you know, there's, in the exemption section of this, we talk about being able to remove trees, you know, whatever. We could just say, if you have trees above 32 TDUs and you're on residential property, you can cut them down. Period.
I would like that.
Well, I'm telling you, you guys are going to...
Well,
obviously, we are on two different sides. Okay, the side that I'm on was based on what I understood to be my task.
Right.
Okay? What I have developed as a result of that is obviously very offensive to some of you. And so I'm going to need you to, you know what I mean? I'm reconciling the difference, I'm going to need the input, the specific input from you to do that because it's vast. You know, there's a divide, a huge divide between where this is and where you want it to be. And to get to where you want it to be, I'm going to need very specific recommendations. So
this is going to be a dilemma because I'm taking it all in and I'm not taking a particular position. I'm trying to learn through the process of the discussion. What are the merits of each concern? But at some point, we're going to have to decide as a commission how we voice our comments about this thing. And so I think one of the things I'm concerned about with all of these things is, you know, how do we put forward what happens if we don't have a consensus on any of these points? Are we just sending forward to council a list of comments? Are we voting on motions to amend particular parts of this? It's just very confusing to me. I don't really know.
Maybe we talk about each area where people aren't happy with what it says, and we do our best to come to an agreement, and then we vote on what we've got, and we say, this is our recommendation, it was 3-2. This is our recommendation, it was 5-0. On this particular clause, it was 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
Or you could take a list of our comments.
Yeah, but his point is our comments, you know, we might say 1,000 is obsessed with, and you might say 1,000 is not nearly enough. So how does she take those comments? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
the consensus that you're talking about, and whether or not that's something that, you know.
Okay.
I would think. Can we get back for a second to 42-270?
2-7? What?
42-270.
Yes.
Has there been yet, I've tried to find it, I can't, has there yet been a fee schedule proposed?
No. Yeah, which means I have no recommendations for what this would look like.
I just wondered what it would look like.
And I don't know, the same goes with the permit fee. And just so you know, we haven't talked about that yet. I would imagine, Jeff, that that's something that was on your list. I don't know if it is or not, along with the application. The intent behind the permit fee was similar to the argument I made about the crime, is that right now tax dollars are going to pay for me to do all this stuff. This is meant to pay for his time to do this stuff from the person that's getting the service. That's the point of the fee, just so you understand.
Which fee are you talking about? Permit fee?
The permit fee, which has not been, it would be proposed in the fee ordinance, which, or the schedule fees, is actually a resolution.
My biggest concern about the whole permitting process is that
the calculation part.
I think it's a very difficult thing to do.
I
read these instructions, and I think it is very difficult for your average homeowner to go out and calculate their TDU. Essentially putting them on the hook at $1,000 a day if they screw up.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, what are you saying?
I would say just have a simple application and a survey. A survey of their property, so that Gene, when he goes out there to do a kind of a estimate, you know.
The survey is like $300. You're going to charge somebody $300 survey?
No, just the existing survey that you would get when you buy a house.
The problem is an existing survey.
Just so he would know what the boundaries are, because he doesn't.
He may not be able to determine, even if he has a survey, what the boundaries are, is the problem. That's why he asks sometimes for a tree survey, so that he can see them located on the lot, because if he's in the field, just having a piece of paper may or may not help him if lines go at angles and stuff from me, even if he could calculate the property frontage distance, if it's an odd shape. I mean, anyway, it just can get complicated.
I'm confused in what you're saying.
I'm saying that in order for Gene to be able to verify whether or not trees are on somebody's lot, just having a piece of paper that is a survey without trees actually labeled on it, he can't do that. He needs to have, there have been cases where he has needed a tree survey.
And how much do those cost?
I don't know.
Well, people can actually draw their lot and put the trees on it.
And they can do that.
And that should be acceptable.
Yeah,
cities do, you know, instead of going to a tree survey or person for $300.
But Sally, I think I have 150 trees. Maybe not. Maybe I have 100.
No, you would only have to do, first of all, you would do the specimen trees. And that may account for all of your whatever TDUs, you know, all that stuff. So you don't
and
have
then
to
put
do
on the side
every
plus
single,
more, you know.
Every single tree, you say, okay, you know, I meet
here's
these requirements.
Here's my 5 trees that meet my 32 TDUs.
And what people say
these
greater
are the trees.
Than, blah, blah, blah.
And
you
then
know,
you,
more than.
You also want to specify what where the trees are that you're going to take down. You know,
well, yeah,
so it can be very simple drawing.
I'm not in favor of this at all, unless you're applying for a building permit or commercial. I mean, I'm not in favor of, I like the way we do it now. I like the fact that Gene comes out and he goes, well, you certainly have more than enough trees. Which trees are you going to take down?
Yeah.
That to me is not onerous. If I have to fill this out and come down and make the calculation, come down and turn this in, that's more burdensome to me than
yeah.
I think it should
and
be.
And it's
actually
a bit of a violation.
No, that, but I have a conceptual problem with if you hand Gene a survey that you, let's say you've got one when you bought your house. If you hand Gene a survey, which is a legal survey, and he can basically look and see where the lines should be, not within engineering acceptable standards, but get an idea of where the property lines are, he's not willing to do that, but from what I'm hearing, he is willing to do, if I take a piece of paper and draw my lot and say, believe me, Gene, this is my lot, here's where the trees are located, boom, which is an not any legal document in any way, shape, or form, and he's going to take my word for it versus taking a legal document, which he's not willing to read.
You would still need the survey. I think what Sally was saying is, on the legal survey, know where the trees are.
Okay, well, what's the difference in just handing him the survey? I mean,
and he has to go out anyway.
Even so,
he's
got
to go out anyway.
He has had situations where he could not determine properly. The lot was obviously borderline with their TDUs, okay?
Right, right.
He could not, there was one that was right on the line. He could not determine whether or not that tree belonged to the applicant or the neighbor. In order to determine whether or not this person met their tree density standard, and he's not here, so I can't ask him what the exact situation was. I believe that he had to ask them for a tree survey.
But, I mean, he definitely has to meet with the homeowner themselves on the property. That should be part of whatever. They have to have an agreement, and then they can... Then he may or may not have to have a survey if he
right.
met with the property owner.
The reason that the application was developed was so that everybody would be under the same
requirement.
So that Gene didn't have some people that he had to say, look, I'm sorry, if you're on Lakeshore, I can look at you and say, you're fine, because you live in a forest. But if you're in River District, you don't dare under trees here. So you're going to go through a different sort of process than the guy on Lakeshore because there are less trees here and I've got to figure this out. That's all that we were trying to do with this.
But I'm okay with that because that's common sense.
Well, that would give it the application though. I mean, I'm hearing that he wants to do away with the application.
Some of us do.
Okay.
I don't want to speak for
and so that. I'm just explaining the intent behind.
I'm neutral.
I think we have to do what is necessary for him to get his job done. But I don't think that it needs to be a burden on the homeowner, you know, with calculating all these
To me, if he can tell without a survey, without an application, that should be good enough.
He can sometimes.
Right. And if he can't, if he can't tell without a tree survey, my opinion would be if a tree is close enough that he's not sure, he should count it. Because guess where all that shade is going and where all that coverage is going, you know? If he's trying to figure out whether if the tree were 1 foot over, it would count for this guy's TDU instead of this guy's TDU, I'm thinking you just count it. You're getting all the benefit of it.
Anyway. Reminds me, you brought up the tornado. Reminds me when, after the tornado, the guy behind me went and planted a bunch of trees, replaced a bunch of trees, and then about 6 years later decided to put fences back there. So he wanted to make sure the fence was, you know, really legal. So he had his lot survey, and he suddenly found out that the 6 trees or 7 trees, or how many trees he planted, were all on my property. He thought, and I said, thanks.
Yeah.
That's good.
More trees.
But they were only on by a couple of inches. In other words, the line was so close, yeah. He just assumed they were his. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can get rid of the application. I mean, that's, you know, I'm not doing that. But
Well, we're going to have to go.
I think there's a lot of things that need to be thought through. I would be not too hasty in making that decision.
Well, like I said, what this may end up looking like is a P&Z ordinance, you know, property rights heavy ordinance versus, you know, tree protection.
Right.
Well, ordinance. So.
One of the things, Lee, I mean, I've only lived here, I don't know, 12 years, but for years I felt like that it was already difficult for the homeowners in the city regarding trees. And then I get this 29-page ordinance that looks like we're putting shackles on these people, you know, because they cut down a tree. So from what I thought, felt like I was already being oppressed as a homeowner, and now, you know, the Church of Trees has decided what I can and cannot do with this renewable resource that I have furniture made out of in my house. And so it just seems like to me that, I mean, so that's my, I know it's a personal prejudice that I came into this like, what is the deal with the trees? I think trees are wonderful. They're beautiful. I love trees. I have a lot of trees. I plant trees in my yard. You know, I had one that died. I replaced it with a better tree. But it does seem to me that we've taken something that's already a little burdensome and making it downright onerous on homeowners.
I think right now when they sign a tree declaration statement is, I think, what they're supposed to do. And I'd have to check that. I thought that it was already their responsibility to verify that they were meeting their requirement. I think Gene asks that of people sometimes, except in the case where he can. Lakeshore Drive is an example of where it's just so obvious because it's just overwhelmed with trees. But this was just a formality. And if formalizing it is heartache, then, you know, I understand that.
We had brought up before how people can have trees in just one little section or whatever,
right,
or in their, like on the lake. Take out all the trees on the lakeside and have them in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we have a problem with that before when we talked about it? How we thought about having the tree ordinance address that some of the trees and their TDUs, whatever, need to be on the lakeside if you're around the lake, as opposed to all of them in one corner in the back.
Are you saying that specifically?
I was thinking that we had addressed that earlier.
But that should be my point. Are you saying that should be a specific part
of
the code?
That should be something that we should think about if we care, or if the, you know, BLC cares or the city council cares about, you know, being on the lake itself and how things look. I mean, if they want more trees or if they don't care. So, but it's not addressed in here at all.
So that's where you're stepping on property rights, because I'm telling you, you go out on the lake and you look at both of my neighbors' homes, and I don't like the fact that they cut all their trees down, but their homes are beautiful, their backyards are beautiful, it looks much better than mine, even though I've got, you know, a couple dozen big specimens.
But it makes yours look odd, doesn't it?
Regulating the placement of trees on residential lots is something I've never been doing. And I understand it. I'm a professional in this area, and you all are citizens of this city. And I understand where you're coming from. But we want something that's, you know, Berkeley. And I'm looking at this from, you know, a bigger picture just because that's my experience.
Right.
So I have to, you know, I don't just create things for Berkeley. To go beyond that. But even so, what you're talking about would be quite unique to do, to regulate, you know, where a residential property had to have trees. That would be,
I mean, a certain percentage here, I mean, on the lakeside versus 100% in the back. You know, I mean, even if it's, I mean, I don't know. I just thought it should be addressed.
Just a point of process, and we're now at 9:00, and I'm happy to stay as long as it takes to make sure all issues are aired. But I do want to ask the group, and I know Jeff has to leave soon, if we can take a moment at least to spell out what are some reasonable next steps for us, that so that Lee has a sense of direction of what to focus on between now and the next meeting.
My recommendation would be that we all go through this carefully and jot down our own notes about what we would like to see. If we disagree with what it says, you know, or just say I'm fine with it the way that it is, and then we get together and we go through it clause section by section, and we address anything. If anyone's got anything they want to see different on a section, we talk about it. And I mean, I guess we can decide at the time, but it makes sense to me that we try to come up to a message that to something that we can present 5-0, but if we can't, eventually we just have to come to a vote on it and go, okay, you know, until we can get something we agree at least 3-2 on.
Or even if we send it to the city and say, you know, we had 5-0 on this and, you know, 5-0 on eliminating jail time, or, you know, 3-2 on the size of specimen trees. I mean, you know, if we went clause by clause and you know... Mm-hmm.
Or if we could come up with something where we did have a consensus most of the way through, then maybe you draft something with all of our changes in it, like you said, and right. Send it to them that way, if that makes sense.
I just know that they would like, I mean, I think that that's what they're looking for. If what you come up with seems to me to be the opposite of the intent that I understood to be what was going on, then I'll probably end up giving them both and letting them, you know, figure out which way to go.
I think
just
it
because
is.
I've already done the work on this, and I don't want to scrap all of it in the event that they are hoping for some of this stuff to happen, and they may not.
I appreciate that. And let me tell you, you do a lot of work for the city, but you did this work at the behest of council, and if they decide not to do it, it doesn't mean the work was in vain. I mean, we all worked on that apartment thing at the behest of council, and they voted it down because somebody didn't want an apartment in the city.
Right.
You know?
I'm not worried about that part, obviously.
But what I'm saying is, if we've got at least a quasi-legislative body, which is the way we've described at our training, and we have a lot of recommendations, I would hate to see you go to council and say, they didn't like this, so here's their recommendation and here's my recommendation. I would think that would be against what we were asking
and
you to do.
And this isn't my recommendation necessarily. Not to, Rebecca was the person that, like I said, was the grant person and has been sort of, she's the BLC liaison to council. I explained to her, this is basically an ordinance, and sort of the way I think about ordinances is it's easier to take things out of them than it is to write stuff into them. So you sort of go with the, here all of it is. What do we need to scale back on? What do we need to change? What do we want to get rid of? That makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is if you come back and say, you know, we don't think we need to have off-street parking requirements, I'm gonna respectfully very much disagree with that. Okay? That's what I mean. Like, as a planner, I'm going to say that's a big mistake. So that
off-street parking is like this parking lot?
Right.
I mean, it's not on-street. I didn't have any problems with those. Except the alternating seemed like a little, you got to follow this exact rule. That was the only thing I thought that seemed a little, like, okay.
Right.
And somebody doesn't like Leland Cypress, apparently. I didn't understand that. But
yeah, Leland's become a problem. It's just generally speaking, they, I think, don't make it that long, and they're overused. And that's, they were very popular, and I think a lot of them sort of sunset at the same time. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, all these Leland's have died, and they've left a lot of exposure. I mean, yeah, that's just one of the things that I think people that have got some experience in this area have learned.
Let me just, again, I'm focusing on the process, not the substance. I think Dan has made a recommendation that after we adjourn, we call for written comments on the various sections of this document to be sent to Lee.
You all meet again on the 13th of July. So if you could take 2 weeks,
that's
13th. y'all bring
well, I'm not suggesting we send changes to Lee. That was not my suggestion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My suggestion was we all read through it carefully because it seems like we've done different degrees of that, mm-hmm. and we all put our own notes down and we convene and we hash it out section by section as a group what we would like it to say and hope, and try to come to a consensus on each section. Mm. And then we send that. We send that to Lee.
We can do it that way, or we could send it to Lee, and she could. She might be able to delete half of it because we've all got the same comments, so we wouldn't have to bring it up.
We're not going to have the same initially. We're not. And what's she going to do? She's going to get five different comments on this particular section. What's she going to do with that?
Right, if not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. It wouldn't be worth it. But if it's like 4 out of 5, she could say.
But if we're sitting here together and we come to a section and all of us have written the same thing, then we can just move on.
So it's going to be fast. Having a special, can we do a special? Are you thinking a special call meeting between now and July? Was that possible for people to do that?
Yeah, because I think this is
going
to take a while.
I'm going all next week, and then it's July 4th. We can.
I'm not available one of the weeks.
I think July is going to be risky. I mean, we could try.
No, I mean, I'm talking about 2 weeks from now, like June 22nd.
I can't be here then.
You have to be here. What's our legal requirement as far as that goes? Can we meet just to try to come to consensus on sections without you? Or?
Probably.
We had to divide up roles in terms of keeping good records and making sure the communications are easy for her to understand because she's the one that's responsible in her capacity to create the official record of anything that's done. So,
we just have to take
it. What about June 29th? Do we know off the top of our head if you're available June 29th?
Is that a Tuesday? No.
That's 2 weeks.
Well,
you're in
house. That's 3 weeks.
It's 3 weeks.
I'd be here.
You'd be here.
But it should be 2 weeks before the next regularly scheduled meeting.
It is.
I'm in training in the simulator. I just have to see if I'm going to be off in time, but I don't have that with me.
So you're a question mark.
Yeah, I'm probably 70-30 that I can do.
Yeah, 29.
Okay.
So in preparation for that, everyone needs to really go through it on their own and write down notes like Jeff did.
Yep.
And if we come with our own notes, it shouldn't take that long, really, to get through it, I don't think.
Well, and it wasn't really hard. I mean, I just read each section. It was like, object, violently object, maybe acceptable. I don't like this number. I want this number bigger.
Yeah.
I think this is too But I actually put violently object twice.
And what were your violent objections in the application?
One was the jail time.
Jail time.
Does it have to be a Tuesday if I'm in the sim that night?
Mondays would be fine.
For everybody? For everybody?
Thursday, I think I can do any of those nights.
What I can do is if I have a problem with the 29th, I'll send you guys a list of all the days. Which
that sounds like a plan. Yeah.
It would be a lot of days that I'll be available.
Right. Right.
If I'm in the sim in the evening, I guess it's a problem.
Lee, would you agree to try to see if we can firm up a date based on the inputs of availability and try to do this? Do we have to? Are there some advertising requirements? I mean, do you have to go through all that stuff when you do a special meeting?
Yeah,
ride?
I'll have to advertise it.
Okay.
So we need to come with a date within the week.
Okay.
When I get home, I'll try to send something out.
Okay, if we're having sort of a work session to hammer out what we can and cannot agree to, assuming citizens come, I mean, it could be so disruptive that we don't get anything done. So can we hear their comments and then go into a closed session to get our work done?
Typically with work sessions, I think that we can set some ground rules for the public.
Yeah.
Tell
us what your comments are, and then we have to work. And you can listen, but you can't.
They don't listen to us. I think the most useful thing for them would be to just listen to us go through it, and then if they have a particular point to make, they could. But there's really no. don't know that we've ever had a closed session, although most of them are, since a few people show up. So, but I think we
can. Okay, I mean, my concern is we've got five people here, and Rodney's mostly, as he said, been neutral. So we've had four people really voicing our concerns. And if we had four more out there, this could go on a really long time.
Right.
I'm not saying that they have a right. I'm just saying that.
What we may do is explain to them that when I advertise it, first of all, work session isn't really invite the public to attend. It's sort of advertisement. It's usually like, you know, we're working on something. We will be meeting July 13th to hear comments from people. We will be ready to, you know, hopefully this will have been transformed into whatever document it's going to be and ready for public consumption by 13th meeting.
So if we have all of us here, that's the reason why you have to advertise it, is because we're getting together, the five of us? Mm-hmm.
Because you said we could do this via email.
You could do it via email.
But then they can't be there.
Right.
So you don't have to advertise.
So if we get together, you have to advertise it? So we're following the same rules as the city council?
That's my understanding.
It still would be so difficult to do via email, though.
No, I'm not suggesting we do it via email, but... Okay.
I will check on that in the meantime. Whether or not we can have a closed...
Okay, I'm just interjecting the process. I want to be sure we all have the same understanding. We are going to meet before the end of this month. We're going to bring to that meeting our comments and suggestions for alteration of what we have received. And we are going to, in the process of the meeting, try to achieve consensus on any and all changes that have been recommended by any member of the commission.
And I could see us sending something that says we agree on the definitions 5-0, and we, you know, this is 4-1 on this, and we will go 5-1 on specimen trees if the, you know, diameter is, you know, 48 inches or, you know, I mean, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see those kinds of 3-2 here and 5-1 there, 5-0. As a document that we send to the council.
If we can't come to a consensus.
If we can't come to a consensus.
But we may be able to.
Sure.
I mean, usually with the variances, usually we
get
95% of the time.
Yeah.
Or for us. Usually Marty does it.
Right.
Am I going too fast in entertaining a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
So moved.
Thank you. This meeting stands adjourned. Bang. Thank you. That was lively.